Again, good morning or afternoon, everyone, and welcome to EMForum.org. I am Amy Sebring and will serve as your host and moderator. We are very glad you could join, especially with our change. For any newcomers, I'm not sure we have any today, but we will be providing some instructions as we go along so you can relax and participate with us, and we do want you to take part in this discussion. If you need assistance, you may use the hand-raising button on your participants panel, and our associate, Lori Weber, will try to help you via the chat panel. Our topic today is followership. We have devoted some previous programs to leadership, which you can find in our archives, but this is the flip side. Followers are obviously critical to the success of good leaders. But first, for the benefit of our newcomers, we will begin with an overview presentation, and then we will proceed to your questions or comments. We'll provide further instructions just before we begin the Q&A, but we ask you not to submit your question or comment until we do get to that part of the program. We are making a recording, which should be available later this afternoon, along with a copy of today's slide. And the text transcript will be posted early next week. If you're not on our mailing list, you can subscribe from our homepage, and then you will get a notice when these materials are ready, as well as notices of future programs. Now, it is my privilege to welcome back Gary Breeze, principal with Breeze and Associates, and serving currently as the local program integrator for the Wide Area Recovery and Resiliency Program for the Denver UASI. In 2008, he was appointed to be regional administrator for FEMA Region 8, and he previously served as vice president, emergency management, and homeland security for ICF International. Please see today's background page for further biographical details and related links. This is Gary's second time in the forum, and he is always thought-provoking. Welcome, Gary. Thank you very much for taking the time to be with us again today, and I now turn the floor over to you to start us off, please.
Amy, thank you. And for those of you who were planning to join yesterday and were not, and I managed to cancel, it was for a good reason. Our granddaughter was born more than a week early, so that sort of throws schedules into disarray, but all, again, for a good reason. So thank you for coming back today. In front of you, I'm showing a slide of that famous town in Japan that if you go back to the tsunami, you recall the black water from the ocean coming over the seawall. This slide shows the top, the radio antenna, and the top of the roof ladder for the Emergency Operations Center, a three-story building, which was fully staffed in response to the earthquake. And I start a presentation on followership with this kind of slide just to remind us why we're doing this. This is the water is receding. 30 people in the EOC went to the roof, and after the waters receded, 10 people survived. Here's the final slide of the EOC. As you can see, it and much of the rest of the town was destroyed. Interestingly enough, that the one of the structures that survived intact was the seawall that was overtopped. So reflect on that as we go into this next presentation of followership. Let me begin with a story, a personal story. And it involves the number of firefighter fatalities that were going on in the United States about 7 or 8 years ago. And in particular, the number of firefighters who were dying in recruit training, which is absolutely the most controllable environment that any organization has, and that's the training environment. I listened and I watched, and I realized that something needed to be said, and I wrote an article that called for the criminal investigation of every firefighter fatality in the United States, in recruit training, or in actual operations. And the idea was to start at the highest level of investigation, gather all of the possible material that could be gathered, and then make a judgment whether this was in fact some type of action that was a criminal action or work its way back down to a complete accident without any negligence. I wrote the article and submitted it to our editor for publication. She read it, came in, knocked on my door, came into my office and said, "I don't think you should write this article because it's going to upset a lot of people." And I said, "No, this is a very serious situation. I want to write the article." She went away. A couple days she came back, knocked on my door again, and said, "You know, I've read the article again. We've now set the article in place on the newsletter. I think you need to reconsider." And she again said, "No." I again said, "No, I want to go ahead and push it forward because it needs to be done." And then several days later, she came back and said, "Listen, we're at the printer. I have another article I can substitute for the one you've written. Take some time to think about the article, and we can put it in the next issue." And I said, "No, I want to go ahead and print it." Well, the reality was the article caused a huge stir in the fire service, such that people were asking the board of directors of the International Association of Fire Chiefs to terminate me. And I survived, and the article was written and caused a lot of discussion. And I'm not sure, quite frankly, if it moved the agenda forward down the field for firefighter safety or not. But what I am sure about is that editor was demonstrating absolutely the best of what we can call courageous followership. She was willing to challenge the CEO of the organization three times and ask whether this was an appropriate action to take. And that's what we want from followers. The more I reflect on my own experiences, this one and other ones that I've had throughout my career, the more I recognize the absolute importance of the skill of followership. Because, in fact, no matter who you are, no matter what position you hold, you are a follower more frequently than you are a leader. Everybody works for somebody else. We're all followers. Even, and as you reflect on your own position in your own organization, the opportunities for true leadership, where one person sort of makes one decision that fundamentally changes an organization or a structure or a vision or direction, are actually very far between and few in occurrence. Because most of the time, what we're doing, at least in an organization that practices both good leadership and followership, is seeking the opinions of the people that work with us so we make better, more informed decisions. More eyes on an issue will always generate a better solution. And this candle reflects vision. A leader, a leadership provides vision, lights a candle, and followership reflects that vision. Now, if there's no followers, there's no reflection. And without a reflection, does it really make a whole lot of difference whether the candle has been lit or not? See, we know this. Leadership is influencing others. And followership is seeking or accepting influence. Subtle but very significant difference. And as Amy said at the beginning, we talk an awful lot in all of our organizations about the skills of followership. In fact, we emphasize followership to the, I mean, leadership to the exclusion of followership. You can't have one without the other. A leader without followers is just one person in a wilderness. Good followership or good leadership makes it easy for followers to follow. And good followership makes it easy for leaders to lead. Now, since we concentrate so much on the skills of leadership, we've forgotten one small detail. And that detail is this point on this slide, that success in an organization is the result of good followership rather than just great leadership. The characteristics of followership are many, and many of them are nuanced. How to ask the right question at the right time. What words do I use to ask the question so the leader can accept the question without getting upset, especially if it's a direct challenge. I've selected five of these. Just like with leadership, there's a whole host of skills. I've selected five to talk about. And as we proceed, you know, we normally concentrate on those red and green boxes. Those are the important people, quote unquote, important people in the organization. And we usually have a top-down view of what the organization looks like. Well, we're going to concentrate today on those gray boxes and talk about how, as a follower and as a leader, we can enhance the environment to make our organization stronger. See, most of what happens is when we sit around groups like this, and I'm not talking about an emergency operations, although I am talking about emergency operations. I'll come back to that in a minute. See, most of the time we're sitting around groups like this, we're having questions, we're trying to decide directions, we're addressing problems. And the dialogue between leaders and followers, as you listen to these kind of discussions, you will know within minutes the quality of the leadership in the organization and actually probably the quality of the decisions that the organization is going to make. Now, you say, well, I run an emergency organization. We can't have situations where we have leaders giving orders that are questioned by followers. And my response to that is no, that's not correct. There are so few situations where a leader would give an order that should not be open to question, even in a safety situation. More eyes on the situation may bring a different perspective. You know, somebody says, well, we have this developing situation. We need to, you know, evacuate everybody out of this area in a hurry. There is absolutely nothing wrong with a follower saying, excuse me, if we do that, have we thought about this next action and the action after that that's going to happen? And that pause, that 30-second, 90-second discussion about what the ramifications of the decision are, that's the quality linkage between an order by a leader and a decision by an organization. See, people don't like to describe themselves as a follower. You know, nobody has said to me ever in my entire career, I want to be the best follower possible. I want to have follower on my business card. Nobody's ever said that. And when I ask people, well, tell me who you see as a good follower in your organization, they're usually able to tell me who a good follower is, and they can also give the characteristics of that person. Yet, by our evaluation systems and by our discussions, we show minimal value to those skills. If you are a student of leadership, then you must be a student of followership. here's an example everybody can relate to. Spock and Kirk. The yin and the yang between these two people and their decisions, one highly logical, one highly intuitive, was what drove much of the script for this TV series. See, each of these people clearly understood their role. There was not a question that Kirk was the captain and that Spock was the first officer. They understood their role, they pushed each other, and they balanced the other one's weaknesses with the positive aspects of the other one's strengths. Most importantly, they have absolute trust with each other. It did not make any difference what one of these people made a decision with or without the presence of the other one. The trust was there, knowing that it was made for the right reasons with the best information at the time. Now, followership is very much like the foundation of a building. We dig it out, we construct it, and then we put the building on top of it. And once we start constructing the building, the foundation becomes nearly invisible to the structure. Yet, this is the essence of a strong organization, is strong followers. Where do we learn this stuff? Well, first, we have to respect and to support the values of good followership. See, as a leader, you cannot make anyone do anything. Oh, you can position power them. You can order somebody to do something. But all of us know that orders have been given and orders have been ignored, or we have passive compliance where we're just going to do it because we have to do it. Ladies and gentlemen, that is not what we want from our organization. We want people to do things because they want to do things. We want people to seek the follower, the leadership of the leader. Good leadership is in fact defined by the follower. Each of us can give the characteristics we want from a leader. And leaders should be able to give the same characteristics or similar characteristics that they want from a follower. So first, respecting and supporting the values of good followership. Now, where do we go learn this stuff? If we were in a live audience, I would ask each of you, tell me where you have studied followership. Tell me where you can go take a course in followership. And as we look around, the only institutions that I've been able to find on a pretty consistent basis who have something in their curriculums, in their courses dealing with followership is the military. And I've done a pretty good search around the country in many universities looking for followership courses. And the only one that I could find that actually had a class in followership was the U.S. Air Force Academy. Other of these universities had portions of courses that were on followership, but none of them have followership as a course, a core course required for the completion of a master's degree or a bachelor's degree in management, leadership, entrepreneurship, nothing that I can find. And if you have something, please send it to me. So since we can't go learn it someplace, not easily at least, we tend to look for role models, people who've influenced us. You say, I really want to be like that person. I like who they are. One of my favorite role models is Admiral Jim Loy. Jim Loy was the Commandant of the Coast Guard, and when you went to him and talked with him, he had the skill of making you feel like you were the only person in the world, much less in the room, at the time he was talking to you. Any of us could meet Jim Loy and talk with him for 5 minutes and say to ourselves, if I work for this person, I would do anything this person asks, because that's the kind of skill set he brings as a leader. So it's people who've influenced us. When I ask live audiences, who's influenced you? People talk about their father, their minister, their rabbi, a good friend, a teacher, and perhaps it's in the military, it's one of the leaders they came across in the military. So, but yet we have not, most of us have never taken the time to sit down and say, I like that person, and I'm going to try to quantify, write down what I really like about them, whether they're a leader or whether they're a follower. To just take the time to write, you know, five characteristics about that person and say, I want to learn those characteristics. So if we don't have contemporaries, and many of us do have contemporaries, but if we don't have good contemporaries for followership, we go to people who've influenced us, and then we go back to history, and then we look to the contemporary, I'm talking about contemporary meaning current, model. So if we look here, this goes way back in history. This is a person on the right side of the screen is a picture of Sam Elliott, who's portraying the character on the left side of the screen, a Brigadier General John Buford from Gettysburg. He's a cavalry officer leading the Union Army into Gettysburg and made first contact with the Confederates. And if you've seen the movie, he says something like, we have to hold them here because we need to hold the high ground. And he dismounted his cavalry, and they took positions and held the Confederates from moving any further into Gettysburg, actually setting the Union victory up because they held the high ground from that point forward. While he was a ranking officer, he was certainly not the ranking officer in the Union Army. He took initiative because he saw something that was critical and needed to be done, and knew that if he did that, he would have the support of his commanding general. Another one. In fact, this one is more recent, just a couple of years ago. This is Sergeant Dakota Meyer. As you can see, he's being presented the Medal of Honor by President Obama, and he received the Medal of Honor for actually disobeying orders. Three times he asked permission to move forward because his unit was under really serious attack, and he was three times denied that permission. He and a driver, actually I believe it's a soldier, defied orders and drove four times forward into the kill zone, rescuing Afghan soldiers as well as U.S. military soldiers. In fact, he's credited with saving 36 lives by defying orders and saying, I'm taking my own initiative. And you say, well, those are good characteristics of a leader. Ladies and gentlemen, if he would have failed, he could have very well received a court-martial for doing exactly the same thing. A courageous follower recognizing the situation and taking action to correct it. And most of us will not recognize this fellow. His name is Greg Smith. He resigned from Goldman Sachs about a year ago now. He resigned by sending an email to he was in London, actually, at the Goldman Sachs office in London. He resigned by email about 6:10 in the morning, New York time, I'm sorry, London time, which was about 2:10 in the morning, London time. About 15 minutes after he resigned, an op-ed piece written by him appeared in the Wall Street Journal. He said, in short, I'm resigning because the culture in Goldman Sachs has become toxic and does not represent the values that I want in an organization. He'd worked for them for almost 12 years, and friends of his said he resigning so publicly was, and he was so loyal to Goldman Sachs up until the sort of the end, that it was the ultimate act of loyalty for him to resign. Very public resignation. In fact, so public, on the next trading day, the value of Goldman Sachs stock dropped $2.1 billion. I think he made his point. And Goldman Sachs continues to have difficulty today, and he found a job within about 3 or 4 months after. People value that kind of loyalty.
Gary, I'm sorry. We're having difficulty hearing you right now.
Okay.
And you make sure you're speaking directly in the phone as best you can. I think it's the phone connection. I'm sorry, but please go ahead.
Is this any better?
I think so.
Okay. So, you know, I'll repeat here just a moment. So he resigned from Goldman Sachs very publicly. Op-ed appeared in, I said, New York, Wall Street Journal. It was the New York Times, actually. And the value of this follower resigning was set at about $2.1 billion when Goldman Sachs stock dropped the next day. And he talked about the toxic leadership in the organization and the failure of the leaders to listen to the followers. This is a picture of a Lehman Brothers office on the day that these employees were finding out that 26,000 of their colleagues lost their jobs in a $600 billion bankruptcy, the largest bankruptcy in the history of the United States. And in review of the bankruptcy, they pointed out again the leadership culture in Lehman Brothers was toxic, and not only did they not listen to people who challenged decisions, they responded in an aggressive manner against those people. And they also failed to respond to those challenges. So here's two different organizations where followers are saying, I have a problem with what's going on here. I have a problem with what's going on here. And they're either not being listened to or they're actually being disciplined for expressing that opinion. A very, very dangerous situation. And for these 26,000 people in particular, a very costly situation. I'm going to talk about five characteristics of followership. First one is actually the hardest one, and that's to tell the truth. See, our first action very frequently when we're asked a question about something, no matter what position we're in, our first action is to, at least mine is very frequently, to try to minimize or cover up something that's been a mistake or an error. Did you send that email? Yeah, I did. I sent that email. Did you make the phone call and talk to this person? Yeah, but I haven't been able to get a hold of him yet. Did you finish that project? Oh, sure, it's done. When, in fact, maybe I haven't sent the email. Maybe I haven't made the phone call. Maybe I haven't completed the project. But we have that desire to minimize or cover up mistakes because we have been punished in the past for telling the truth. What a interesting way to teach our people what we value. And I can tell you the longer I do this, the more comfortable I am just telling somebody, no, I haven't sent the email. Thanks for reminding me. No, I haven't made the telephone call. I've had other priorities. I'll make it this afternoon. And no, I have not completed the project, but this is when I can get it completed. It is a liberating feeling to be able to do that, especially in an organization that goes, that's okay. We understand. It's a priority. You had other priorities. I trust your judgment that you did the right thing. And there's a parens behind that, even though you didn't necessarily do the right thing. But if we want people to tell the truth, we have to be able to not hurt them when they tell us the truth in a manner that they become hesitant to do it in the future. You know, I've learned that when a colleague of mine comes to me and uses a term similar to "we need to talk," they probably are trying to say, "We need to talk about something that you've done that's either upset me or other people and you need to know about it." And you know, it's sort of like, what have I done? And they'll usually smile and go, "Well, let me tell you what happened." And they'll tell me a story. And it gives me the opportunity to reinforce that skill of followership. And more importantly, it gives me the opportunity to correct the mistake that they're telling me. Telling the truth is the foundation of everything that we do. The second one is support, don't blame. What does that mean? It means that when a decision comes down or a decision's made, whether you're a follower or a leader, we have the obligation to support the decision. Too often we seek popularity by criticizing others, especially those of us in mid-management or even any position in an organization. But mid-managers are especially susceptible to this because they're getting it from both sides, from upper management and from the colleagues that work with them in their particular area. They'll say things like, "Well, I don't know. I don't know why that decision was made. That was made by somebody else." Those kinds of statements simply reinforce a toxic environment. Instead of saying, "I don't know why that decision was made. Perhaps even I was not involved in that decision. But I know that the decision was made for the right reasons with the best information that they had at the time. And I'm sure once we find out what it was, we'll understand why they made that decision." We don't want somebody saying, "Do this because of something else." For instance, somebody says, "Well, we need to clean up the office because such and such is coming. You know, we need to change the way we're doing things because something else is happening." You know, we don't need to do it because of something. We need to do it because the office is messy. It requires a cleanup. You know, it's so easy. Like, you know, the board of directors is coming in, so we need to clean up the office. We blame it by saying words like that. We blame the other people, and they don't even know they've been blamed. And then people begin resenting the fact that such and such is coming because every time he or she comes, we have to do all this other stuff. They don't even know it's being done. And then we have, related to this, is something called the absent person model of trust. And what that is when somebody's not in the room, talking about them in terms that we would not talk about them if they were in the room. We all love doing it, whether we do it over the coffee table in the kitchen, you know, in an office, or whether we do it over drinks after work. We talk about people all the time. We actually enjoy doing that. But that is, in effect, part of this number two, supporting and not blaming. Because when you participate in discussions about somebody else and they're not there, and things are being said that would not be said if they were there, what you're saying to everybody in that room is, "You can talk about me in the same manner when I'm not here." And none of us like that. So this absent person, I mean, what a leadership followership moment is when somebody's sitting around a group of people and they're talking and they start talking about somebody individually, to have somebody go, "Excuse me, would we be talking about such and such in the same terms if they were sitting here in the room?" And everybody would go, "Oh, no, I wouldn't do that." Well, then don't do it here. If you won't tell her or him to his face the same stuff, then I don't want to hear it here either. What a terribly risky situation to put yourself in. but it draws very clear lines about trust and truth and blame. They're all interrelated. And here is this coach by asking questions. The nuance is how do you ask the questions to expand the discussion, not stop it. I'll give you a good example. I'm in a meeting, there's a whole group of people there, I happen to be the CEO in this situation. There's talk that's going on, and one of my colleagues asked a question to the group, and I answered it. Answered the question, we moved on to the next thing. After the meeting, knock, knock, knock on the door. Somebody says, I need to talk with you. And they use that great term, we need to talk. Come on in. What do we need to talk about? Well, when you answered that question, you yelled at that person. And I said, excuse me? I said, yeah, you yelled at me. And I said, what are you talking about? I don't yell at people. Yelling is when you raise your voice. Unbeknownst to me, the definition of yelling had changed, and yelling now includes embarrassing somebody. Now, the person who was bringing this to me could have very easily said, when you answered the question, you embarrassed them. And in fact, when I thought about it, I went back and I realized that my answer to their question actually did make them look like they didn't know what they were talking about. And that is not my role in that situation as a leader. My role as a leader and as a follower is to learn how to teach or coach by asking questions. The majority of the time, the leader doesn't even need to speak in meetings. They just need to watch the flow of the discussion and ask the right questions to keep the flow going. Now, if it's urgent, obviously, we have a time frame on this. We have to make a decision by such and such. But everybody knows that. You don't have to drive that home like a stake in the heart of somebody, of a vampire or something like that. People won't accept things that we do that way. And when we cut off discussions by answering questions when they don't need to be answered, we, in fact, shoot the messenger and embarrass the person, and they're not going to do it anymore in the future. Number four, give the benefit of the doubt. We touched on this. Respect and leadership cannot be bought with disloyalty by blaming somebody else. I don't know why this was done, but I know once we find out, it was done for the right reasons. That's number four. And then number five is keep the information flowing. As a leader, don't shoot the messenger. Don't embarrass people publicly. Try to ask questions that allow people to express themselves and explain themselves as to why they're coming up with that question. You only have two or three times in front of a group to shoot anybody, and the information will stop flowing. Now, from the follower's perspective, you have to know how to ask the question. Is the person you're questioning somebody who has given the signal already they don't mind being challenged in public, or they'd much rather be challenged in private? You know, very few decisions are in fact final decisions. They're almost always up for reconsideration. It is hard to speak the hard. It is hard to speak the truth. It is hard to hear the truth. But from leaders and followers, these five characteristics, let me review them here real quick. Tell the truth. Support don't blame other people. Coach by asking questions. Give the benefit of the doubt and keep the information flowing will all result in an organization that respects its leadership and respects its followership and will be, in fact, a very dynamic organization. This quote sums it up. If you believe that a lack of position or authority prevents you from leading effectively, it's time to rethink your understanding of leadership. We've talked about followership today, and followership is, in fact, a mirror image of leadership. It is practiced by everyone. Everyone is a follower, and in fact, by being a good leader, you are a good follower. By being a good follower, you become a good leader. And the light of leadership, the vision, is reflected. And ladies and gentlemen, that is the most exciting thing, to watch an organization that has this kind of culture, that respects leaders and followers co-equally, and watch them make phenomenal decisions, have open and frank discussions, and everybody goes away feeling really, really good about themselves. And that's what it's all about. Here's an opportunity to learn more, the Followership Learning Community out of the University of Maryland. Amy said, this stuff will be available. The slides will be available shortly. I'd urge you, if you're interested in followership, to go on to this. There's great resources there. So, Amy, thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you very much, Gary. Lots to think about. We will now proceed to your questions and comments. And in order to do that, all you need to do is type in the Q&A box. Please don't type into the chat box. And you can select host to send it to, and then I will read any questions or comments out loud, and then Gary will respond over the bridge. So we are ready to begin now, and please go ahead and enter your question or comment at any time. We'd also kind of be interested in hearing about any experiences you may have had with this, any challenges you may have had with this, and let's see how we can relate it to our own experience. One of the things that struck, while we're waiting, Gary, one of the things that struck me that you emphasized was the importance of trust between the leaders and followers or members of a team. And it seems to me that your five recommendations all go to building trust. Is that building trust, just part of the process?
Well, Amy, actually building trust is the process.
Is the process.
There is nothing more important than having a culture of trust in an organization. We've all worked in organizations where that didn't exist, and they are terrible places to work. You know, everybody's CYA all the time. Everybody's looking over their shoulder to see who's going to get screwed next. Right? You don't even want to go to work in places like that. You know, I want to go to work in a place where I'm enthusiastic about going to work every single day. Okay, most days, right? But at the same time, this is what's exciting about it. I mean, when you see this operate, when you have that culture and people trust each other, it is tremendous. Yeah, you know, I see we had a couple questions, and can I answer them?
Oh, in the chat. Yes, go ahead.
Okay. So Donovan Puffer is asking, if it doesn't already exist in an organization, a culture of followership has to be grown. What's the first seed of followership and who plants it? Well, one, followership is done by modeling, you know, and it's understanding that ideally, the leader plants it. The leadership team plants it. This is how we're going to work together. In the absence of that, The only thing you can do is understand what the principles are and follow those principles. And at one point in time, hopefully, and this is a really tough thing to say, hopefully you get enough people who believe that that the right thing is being done and they begin following it. Now, realistically, that's probably not true because organizations take tremendous energy to change. And organizations that have a culture that where followership is not valued, and there's lots of them, will take literally years to change that relationship. It can be done. And if you're not the leader, it's a much harder slog to do. But if you know what your values are, you know what needs to be done. You just keep modeling those time and time and time again. And, of course, every so often you run into the situation where it's just not going to change. And you've got two opportunities. You've got two decisions then. Bunker in and wait it out, or probably leave. And I'm talking about leave either mentally or actually physically leave. There's just those situations where you just got to wait it out and see what happens. And hopefully the leadership will change. That's a terrible answer, I know.
Okay, I have a couple more here for you, Gary. One's from Ava Jean. She says, thanks, Gary. This hits me as being applicable to all of society's institutions, including all of us in the emergency management field. Is there any institution or discipline where followership is not pertinent?
Well, let's take it back to a real basic one. Let's take it back to the family or the group of people that you live with, however you define that. You know, I'll take it back personally. When my wife and I do not have open communications and trust and all the other things we talked about, we get into those situations where we're having a bad day in the Breeze household. Right, and then we pause and we recognize what's going on, and there's reasons for bad stuff to happen and miscommunications to happen and that. But we pause and we go back and this isn't what we want. We got to start talking more to each other, or we got to lay out expectations better. And we've been married a long time and we still have these discussions. And that unit between my wife and I is fully reflective across every other organization. Organizations go through cycles just like relationships go through cycles. And no, there is no applicable institution where it's not pertinent. It is pertinent in every relationship because what we're talking about is not institutions, not organizations. We're talking about interpersonal relationships.
Let's take this back to emergency management just a little bit, Gary. As I'm listening to you, I'm thinking, just like anything else, especially with a response organization, that this building of trust, working through these issues, should be part of preparedness. In other words, you don't want to wait until the disaster hits to find out, you've got some big holes in the team, right?
Well, let me give you an analogy. You know, if our organizations, and I recognize the scope of emergency management organizations is never very large, except when we're talking about FEMA. Even the state organizations aren't particularly large. But if those organizations spent an equal amount of time developing the skills of leadership and followership as much as we do on checking the boxes for plans and procedures and policies and all the things that we now have outside demands put on us for our performance, if we spend an equal amount of time on the human aspect of what we do and how we work with each other, our organizations, that's a force multiplier. Our organizations will be much better. Work will get done quicker. People will be happier. And it doesn't matter whether it's emergency management or not. It doesn't matter if it's a large organization or a small organization. Did I answer your question, Amy?
That's fine. Thank you. Question from Steve Lieberman. He says, nice presentation, Gary. So other than the military, how do we train our people without appearing condescending? I'm thinking honesty, encouraging constructive dissent, but requiring acceptance and support of the leadership decisions. What am I missing?
Ask the question again for me.
Okay. I think what it goes to is how do we provide training and followership? You know, you mentioned this kind of lack of training and where you had looked for it. How do we teach good followership skills without appearing, you know, that we're trying to put people down?
Well, first thing is we have to recognize that most organizations need help with both leadership and followership. And that comes from an open, honest assessment of just sitting down and saying, is this the organization that we want? Is this how we want to work? And how can we work better? And let the group tell us what they want. And believe me, if you're in a toxic organization, that may or may not be possible because people already know that the messengers have been shot, people have been disciplined, maybe people have been fired, terminated, terminated, transferred, all sorts of retaliations for telling the truth. That's the worst situation possible. But in an organization that's not at that level, it's sitting down and asking people, what do you want from the leadership team? And asking the same people as members of the team, what do you want as a follower? And what skills do we want to begin exhibiting to each other? What are our values in this organization? And how do we put those values, take them from the wall, so to speak, and put them into practice? I've gone so far in other organizations as to sign leadership agreements that says how we're going to treat each other. And one of those leadership tenets was actually give the benefit of the doubt, because that's how critical it is. I mean, it's taking, I think in that organization, I think we had 10 or 12 leadership tenets. And the entire leadership team signed that. And then that was distributed to the entire organization. Everybody knew how the leadership team was going to treat each other. And that was both, in this organization, it was a career staff and a volunteer board of directors. And when you have that kind of difference between career and volunteer, meaning paid staff and you know, people who volunteer their time for the organization, it becomes even more complicated. But it's reducing these things to writing and saying, these are the values that we're gonna have. We're always going to tell the truth, most of the time. we're gonna give each other the benefit of the doubt. All those five tenets, and there's probably, like I said, there's lots more. But that's the way you begin articulating.
I have a question from Daniel Hahn, and he says, isn't the process of followership actually the process of leader development?
It is, except we don't talk about followership in any leadership development courses. We don't talk about it. I've never been in a class where somebody gets up in front of a leadership class and says, okay, we're here to talk about leadership, but we're really going to talk about followership because that's what's most important. Leaders follow more than they lead. And they lead only because that the followers let them lead. We all know people who have been in leadership positions who everybody went, we're just going to give them rope to hang themselves. Eventually, they're going to get themselves into more trouble and they're going to be gone and we'll be able to get on with our lives. You know, that's the real conundrum. Because in leadership classes, we don't talk about followership. It's not valued. I hope that answered the question.
Very good. And Evadine had another question, which is, and I think you've already answered it, because I guess you've done some research anyway. She said, is the followership principle instilled currently in emergency management instruction, for example, the EMI courses, particularly when leadership is being stressed?
to the best of my knowledge, I've not found it. And if somebody has it, please send it to me.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, this is an entire skill set that we, by our actions, have placed no value on. And it is what makes organizations function.
From my own experience, where I seem to get conflicted the most as a follower is when I feel like my loyalty is to the mission of the organization first and foremost. And when that conflicts with, you know, what the leadership is telling me. So I guess that would be a couple of those principles would kick in, give them the benefit of the doubt and so forth.
Yes. And when people say, I'm loyal to the mission for the organization, everybody should say that. The reality is you're loyal to the person that you next work for, right above you. And while we have missions with phenomenal purposes, you know, it's like when we're in a fight, and I'm talking about, you know, the traditional view of combat. Those people aren't fighting for the nation. They're not fighting for the freedom they're fighting for the person in the foxhole next to them. And too frequently it comes down to that. We're in this situation where we're fighting with our closest team, and that's what functions the best. And once you get above that, the broader things of mission and those things are lost because the leadership culture doesn't value those. And this is about coaching up, and it's about listening down. It's about recognizing that every single person in an organization has equal value to everybody else. It's when we think that we know more, or that we're more important than anybody else, or we're less important than because we're just this. When organizations are exhibiting those kinds of descriptions of themselves, those are organizations that I would consider in trouble.
And on that note, I think we will wrap it up for today. Thank you very much, Gary. You always give us something to think about and see how we can apply it in our day-to-day lives. Folks, thank you very much for being with us. Before you go, please do take a moment to fill out our feedback form here. And if you have not already completed our user survey, we encourage you to participate. You could win an iPad for you or self or your designated organization if you complete it by October 15th. And that survey will pop up after you exit the WebEx today. Our next program is scheduled for October 24th, and we will have August Vernon back with us, and by popular demand, to expand on an earlier program about mass shooting incidents. And please do make plans to join us then. Until that time, have a great afternoon, everyone, and we are adjourned. Thank you all for participating. Bye.